on March 23rd, 2005. For the record, we're going to be opening up the House Committee on Elections and Rules Subcommittee on Campaign Finance Reform. I'm Representative Greg Smith. I have the distinct honor of chairing this very important committee. And why don't we start off with introductions by each of the members, and please tell us a little bit about yourselves and anything you had hoped to gain from work on this committee. So why don't we start with Representative Thatcher. We'll put you right on the spot.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm Representative Kim Thatcher, representing Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburg. And I'll plead the fifth on the rest of it. No. Actually, I'm excited to be here.
Terrific. Representative Holby.
I'm Representative Paul Holby. I'm from District 8, which is South and West Eugene and South Central Lane County, and also serve on the regular Election and Rules Committee. And I'm hoping that I'm excited about this particular committee coming forward with some good reform that's going to help the legislature regain some trust amongst the public, and by providing some transparency in the way we conduct our campaigns, which I think mostly are up to snuff, but we definitely need to be accountable. So I'm looking forward to this effort by the chair and everybody on this committee to just do that.
Sure. Representative Buckley, you're our special committee guest today. Why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself? And
thank you, Representative. I'm Peter Buckley. I represent Southern Jackson County, Ashland, Talent, Phoenix, Jacksonville, a little bit of Medford. I'm here today. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I've been very interested in campaign finance, campaign laws for a number of years, and I believe there's a direct relationship between the way we run our campaigns and the policies that we set in state government, and I'm interested in hearing the views expressed today.
Terrific. Well, welcome. Representative Hunt will be joining us shortly. About a month ago, or perhaps just a little longer than that, House Speaker Karen Minnis and House Democrat Leader Jeff Merkley announced that they wanted to have a bipartisan committee to look at enhancing the accuracy and transparency of campaign finance reporting. And you're looking at the culmination of that desire. Part of the reason for this was, as the speaker stated in an earlier statement, was that Oregonians need to have faith in our electoral system and faith in the accuracy and truthfulness of financial reporting by candidates and political action committees. And I think the work of this committee is going to be to do just that. Take a look at our existing system for financial reporting by both candidates and political action committees, taking a look at the historical background, try and bring in as much information as we can, and then take a common sense approach and say, what is the best way to bring transparency and reliability and accuracy to this very important part of state government? What we're going to start off with today is invited testimony. And what we're going to do is jump right in with a list of folks that we've asked to come forward to share their thoughts on this issue. And I believe this is the list we have before us. Why don't we start off with John Limbach from the Oregon Elections Department with the Oregon Secretary of State. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much for inviting me to testify today. I was asked to come and tell you about the work of a campaign finance disclosure panel that Secretary Bradbury convened more than a year ago. So I'm going to give you a summary of the work of that committee and their major recommendations in this area. As I understand it, the invitation was given for me to do that because you thought that that might be a good place to at least start your discussions and branch out from there. Secretary Bradbury asked this group of folks to get together to look at the subject of campaign finance disclosure in particular and issue recommendations on how to make it easier for Oregonians to follow the money in political campaigns. The panel included four former secretaries of state who served as the co-chairs. They were U.S. Senator Mark Hatfield, former Governor Barbara Roberts, and former secretaries Norma Paulus and Phil Kiesling. The other members, in addition to myself, were two attorneys familiar with campaign finance law in Oregon, John DiLorenzo and Rich Bateri, a volunteer treasurer for a candidate committee, that was Darlene Butler of Ontario, Oregon, one of the principals of a company that provides C&E services to political committees, Susan Matthews of C&E Systems, Lynn Lundquist, a former House Speaker and now serves as President of the Oregon Business Association, and representatives from three groups with a longtime interest in campaign finance disclosure, Andy Miller of Common Cause Oregon, Norm Turrell of the League of Women Voters of Oregon, and Janice Thompson of the Money and Politics Research Action Project. I'd like to preface the recommendations by explaining that this group distinguished the issue of campaign finance disclosure from the issue of campaign finance reform, which is customarily defined as making changes to the rules on what information is required to be disclosed. This group looked at the issue of disclosure itself. What changes should be made to make it easier for the public to receive and understand the information that approximately 600 active political committees report to the state in any given election? So I'll go into the recommendations for you. The first recommendation was online filing and continuous reporting. The committee recommended that an online web-based system would be developed for use by all political committees in Oregon, including state and local committees. After a candidate files for office, they would be issued an account in the system. And under the continuous reporting proposal of this panel, each committee would report each campaign donation and expenditure within 7 days of receiving or spending the money. The system would have a TurboTax-like functionality in that the committee would have a work area in their account that's private and exclusively theirs, in which they would enter the required information for expenditures and donations. The system itself would do the math, reporting the aggregates, et cetera. We would dispense with those forms. You would simply report the required information in, and we'd try to make it as easy as possible for treasurers to do that. When the candidate is ready to report the information, they would push a submit button, and it would be reported to the Secretary of State, which would in turn make it immediately available to the public in a new online searchable database. Large committees would be accommodated by making it possible for them to download information to the SOS system in batches, so they would not need to double enter the information into two separate systems, their own and the SOS. We recognize that, that for very large committees, they sometimes buy sophisticated software that has bells and whistles like automatic generation of thank you letters and that kind of thing. Our system would not do that and would not try to duplicate that, but we would need to accommodate them so that they could simply dump their information into our system at the required times. Recommendation number two was related to treasurer transfers and contributions under a false name. In past campaigns, the Elections Division received complaints that candidates were making contributions under a false name because donations had first been routed from an individual to a PAC affiliated with that candidate, sometimes not clearly affiliated, and then to the candidate's principal committee. To follow the money, an individual had to have some knowledge of who is behind all the various committees, et cetera, and it was confusing for people. This committee, the Campaign Finance Disclosure Panel, recommended creating a classification of a candidate-controlled committee, defined as any political committee that has the same treasurer or directors or the same address as the principal campaign committee, or is controlled by the candidate or elected official, a member of their family or agent. It was determined that this new classification would make it easier for the public to follow the money flowing from one committee to another when they are all committees affiliated with or controlled by a single candidate. Recommendation number three was about campaign loans. the committee determined that masking of contributions can occur with loans that include PAC-to-PAC loans, candidate-to-committee loans, loans from nonprofit foundations to closely related PACs, etc. The committee recommended disclosure of terms of any loan received or made by a committee. All loans should be made by written agreement, and a copy should be retained in the committee's records. Recommendation number 4 dealt with exemptions for small contributions and small expenditures. The panel discussed raising the current threshold of $50 for reporting contributions, but decided that it would be best to leave it at the current level. It also recommended allowing the committee to not itemize expenditures of $100 or less. This recommendation, given the recent concerns about accurate reporting of expenditures, has been a hot topic of discussion of late, and if the committee were to be convened again today, it may result in a different outcome. The committee also recommended that committees be allowed to maintain petty cash fund not to exceed $500 for the purpose of office supplies, transportation expenses, etc. Again, the recent concerns about adequate disclosure expenditures has caused the SOS, the Secretary of State, to think again about that proposal, and the Executive Office of the Secretary of State is now feeling pretty uncomfortable about this concept of a petty cash fund. Recommendation number 5 focused on consistent reporting timelines. In years when statewide elected officials and state senators don't face election, they're not required to file pre-election and post-election reports, even though some are actively involved in raising funds and spending those funds on races. They are only required to file a September report each year following the election. The panel recommended that all committees attempting to influence the outcome of an election be required to report their activities in that election. Recommendation number 6 focused on more complete occupational information for folks campaigns. The panel found that currently campaigns are required to list either the contributor's occupation or the name and address of the contributor's employer. Thus, it is difficult for the public to determine when individuals from certain sectors, industries, unions, etc., have given money to the candidate. The panel recommended that committees be required to obtain both the occupation of a contributor and the name and address of the contributor's employer for a donor with aggregate contributions over $50. The panel strongly recommended the 7-day continuous reporting system and the establishing of an online web-based reporting system to make it easier for candidates to provide that information to the public. But it also looked at an alternate proposal which would involve an online web-based system, but require the campaigns to report their contributions and expenditures quarterly. It recommended that committees active in an election under that scenario file detailed report 30 days prior to an election day and 15 days prior to an election day, unless a quarterly report falls within the same time frame. And in the 15 days prior to an election, contributions and expenditures that aggregate $1,000 or more from a single source or to a single payee should be reported no later than one business day following the receipt of that contribution or making that expenditure. So to review that, it recommended quarterly reports, and then prior to an election, a 30-day report and a 15-day report if a quarterly report didn't fall within that time frame. And then in the 15 days prior to an election, they recommend daily reports for expenditures or donations that aggregate $1,000 or more from a single source or to a single payee. The recommendations made by the panel concerning the 7-day continuous reporting system and all the details that go along with that were introduced in Senate Bill 160, which is currently before the Senate Rules Committee. They have held one hearing and are planning to form a work group on the issue. I hope this summary is helpful. I'd be glad to answer any other questions. We have several other members of the committee in attendance here today, and I'm sure they would be happy to entertain answers to any of your questions as well. So, again, thank you for inviting me to testify. We will do everything we can to provide you accurate information on how the process works, pursue ideas as to any other ideas that you may have in regards to how they would affect the division administratively and candidates and so on, we're very happy to work with you on this subject.
Terrific. We appreciate that, Director. Very quickly, we did introductions earlier. Representative Hunt, could you just take a moment and introduce yourself and share with the audience and with the panel what you're hoping to work towards as we work on this important committee?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. I'm sure I share the exact same objectives as my colleagues. I think there's a real opportunity to not only pick some of the low-hanging fruit that may be out there in terms of campaign finance reforms, but actually, because there's such a spirit of bipartisanship and commitment on this committee, and I think among the representation of the committee that you worked with, that we have an opportunity even to climb a little bit further up the tree and get some good things done that will reflect well on the legislature and prevent abuses in the future. And incentivize good conduct and restore the public's trust in the process. It's kind of interesting. I was realizing I'm coming up on my 15-year college reunion this year, and I was talking to a friend of mine I haven't talked to in 15 years, but we actually served on the elections commission at our college. And I had forgotten that we had been appointed to an elections commission the year after a big scandal had occurred in the college elections. And so they eliminated the entire elections commission and appointed a whole new group of us, and I chaired that commission. And it was a very similar process of doing some things that probably we should have done before, but also trying to look ahead and anticipate other challenges out into the future.
Thank you. Questions of the committee?
Actually, I do have a question.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I love the idea of this online reporting. It seems, utilize the technology that's out there. Would this be provided to the candidate, or would this be a purchase of the candidate?
This would be a system provided to the candidate free of charge. For those large campaigns, as I mentioned earlier, the really large ones, the system probably wouldn't provide the kinds of features that they want, automatic generation of thank you letters or whatever. I don't know what all of those features are. So they will probably want to use something a lot more sophisticated. But, it's free to the candidates.
In my opening comments, I had made mention about the need for transparency and accuracy. The one comment I forgot to make was timeliness. And I'm curious if you could share with this committee the history of how the different due dates on contribution and expenditure reports was derived. Because, boy, it sure seems to be a little bit ad hoc at best.
You know, in order to answer that question, Chair Smith, I'd have to do some looking it up myself. I not only find it confusing, I know the candidates do, but I find it confusing. When I was new to the state, I thought it was awfully confusing. And also the names of the reports were confusing. And I kept asking when I was new, could we just like rename these things so that you associate with them? You associate the report with the day it's due before the election. And this is an opportunity to do that. Whether we go with the 7 days thing, which is essentially eliminates reporting as we know it, or if you go with an alternative proposal like the quarterly reports, we would rename them so that they're associated with the date on the calendar in which it's due. That would be very helpful for people.
Thank you.
But I would be glad to look at the history.
Well, I just think at some point it might be interesting to find out what the rationale was behind that. And then I guess we as a committee could decide whether or not that rationale still makes sense in partnership with the Secretary of State's office.
Sure.
So why don't we go Representative Holvey, and then we'll go Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, you had mentioned that these recommendations are contained in a Senate bill.
Yes.
And they're presently in a work group discussing these recommendations. Were there other recommendations that were discussed that, didn't come out of that this original committee or work group that you think bear this committee's attention?
Well, the Senate bill reflects the seven-day continuous reporting idea. It does not reflect the alternate proposal of quarterly reports. There were also minority opinions on some of those issues that I ran through for you by a couple of members of the committee. The way the panel worked, we were divided up into subcommittees, and we worked two or three subcommittee members on each of those subject areas, and we brought those recommendations to the full committee for a full discussion. And before the final report was issued, if there was somebody that wanted to issue a minority opinion on any one of those subjects, they were certainly free to do that. And those minority opinions are reflected in the report that we handed out for you to look at today. There was, I forget which subjects they were actually on, but I think Norm Turrell from the League of Women Voters had a minority opinion on one of them. And there was at least one more, so I think there are at least two in there.
Do you have a follow-up?
No, but those are contained in this report you gave
us. Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, I'm just curious about the website tracking the contributions. If, for instance, the committee to elect Peter Buckley decided to make a large contribution to the committee to elect Paul Holvey, would there be a link that when that donation showed up going into the Holvey campaign, that if you clicked on the committee to elect Peter Buckley, the Peter Buckley donors would come up so people would actually know that the money from here is actually going into this campaign?
Hopefully, yes. We haven't worked out all the details on the searchable database part of it, but what we would be looking for before we do that are ideas like that to make sure we cover those bases. The whole idea, we've been criticized nationally by groups that look at campaign finance and how the states are doing and give us report cards. We've always been given pretty good grades for our laws, but our overall grade really suffers down into the D category because we don't have a searchable database. And what they want is for the public to be able to go in and say, I want to look at all the donations to the Buckley campaign, and then be able to click on one of those folks who gave you money and look at all the donations they gave to other campaigns,
exactly.
For example.
Yeah.
So we would be looking at national models on the searchable data part of the system to look for the best one possible that allows people to look at that data from all the possible angles and make it available to them quickly.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Hunt.
Mr. Chair, my colleague asked about if there are other issues that came up in the course of your deliberations. I recognize your deliberations concluded about 10 months ago. Are there other issues that you have thought of aha moments since then of, gee, we should have recommended that in addition to these?
I don't think so, because we were limiting our issues to just disclosure. And of course, what's come up since then are issues surrounding campaign expenditures and how they're reported, whether or not they're reported accurately, what happens to someone if they report an expenditure as going to X when it didn't. And that really wasn't the focus of this panel. This panel really focused on how to make it easier for people to follow the money. And so we didn't get into all those subject areas we're being questioned about now in regards to things that actually fall into that category of reform. So I can't say there are any new issues. There are a couple that I mentioned in my testimony about where we think we might back off on them, right. How excited we are about them now.
Follow-up question.
And tell me if, Mr. Chair, if you want to do this in a future hearing, but I guess I'd be interested maybe taking off your disclosure panel hat and just putting on your day job hat, if there are issues still within campaign finance reform but beyond disclosure that you would encourage us to make sure we're covering. I don't know if that's appropriate for today or you want to do that.
You bet. No, let's have that conversation.
If I could have a chance to sort of go back and list those out rather than talking about that on the fly, yeah, there are a few. and they do relate to the expenditure side of things. But I think I'd like to deliberate a little more before I try to give you an answer on the fly to that question.
But why don't we do that, and I'm sure we're going to have several more opportunities to have this discussion, and we'll make sure we bring you back up.
Great.
So, one other question I had, delving a little deeper into a web-based electronic filing system. I, as the candidate, as I input my data and I push send, mm-hmm. it's going to come to the Secretary of State's office.
Mm-hmm.
What's the protection mechanism to separate out an oops mistake from an intentional misrepresentation,
mm-hmm.
Knowing that perhaps, you know, I accidentally list something that it shouldn't be?
Yeah.
How do we protect situation?
Well, we've talked about that people are going to make an error now and then, you know, it's a key in a wrong number. And under our current regulatory scheme, you have a new transaction deadline in which you're allowed to fix a mistake. And we haven't determined. We know we need that kind of concept with the system. We haven't determined yet what would be a fair thing to impose, and frankly it would be great if you folks would weigh in on that kind of thing, what you think would be fair, because we do believe that people need to have a chance to fix their errors. Of course, the situation we get into with those always is you're sometimes opening a door for people to abuse the system, and we get criticized for that now with our new transaction deadline. And so we want to keep that door for potential abuse, the opening as little as possible.
And I think if there could be a mechanism in place where there's oversight to ensure that, you know, corrections that need to be made can be made, mm-hmm. but also oversight to ensure that there's compliance.
Right.
And if, you know, we as a committee can work through that to try and make sure that, you know, we find that appropriate balance, I think that would be very good.
Mm-hmm. We did feel it was very important that the system have what we refer to now as a work area, where you can get in there and input your stuff, look at it, review it, and make sure everything is correct before you hit the submit button, and that's, you know, your campaign's private area, that nobody else could look at that, including us. And so hopefully, you know, by training, people will be looking at this information very carefully, knowing that it's going to be immediately disclosed. You know, it's a whole sort of different thing to think about when it's immediate disclosure.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you're taking the leadership in exploring this, because I think it's definitely something that needs to be considered.
Yeah.
Any other questions of the panel? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm going to ask my former representative and former Speaker of the House, Lynn Lundquist, to come up, President of the Oregon Business Association, before us. Good afternoon, Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm not sure I should be the second one up here. There are some with a lot more knowledge base than I have. For the record, my name is Lynn Lundquist, President of the Oregon Business Association. I'll just a few general comments here. First of all, when they asked me to serve on this campaign disclosure panel, my first thought was this is campaign finance reform, and I happen to have had the distinction or dubious distinction of being in the position of majority leader in 1996 when we had campaign finance reform beyond what we're talking about today. And I can tell you that was an experience. I think President Courtney was on the other side of the aisle for that. And I'm not speaking for or against that. I don't mean it in that way. I just would like to point out, as you go, as I think you may get into that endeavor as well, from what I've gathered here, is that you tread carefully and thoughtfully and think of the second and third reactions and counteractions when you start into that arena, because I found it to be an area where you as legislators were taken basically out of the mix because of independent expenditures and those kind of things. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that the law was bad. As you know, the court overturned the law, but I'm not saying that was bad. I'm just saying it is a very, very complicated and very second and third kind of reactions that you need to think about in that. So that was just sort of off the record, if you will, for a little bit. On this committee, my role there was, I think, to sort of bring at the grassroots as being a candidate, had been through that process and been working with that, and so I tried to do that. I will tell you that I believe the product that you've just heard today is a very good product. Obviously, with all things, we can refine them and make them better. Because I went into that somewhat skeptical that we could really do a lot. But when you really look at the, and I think Representative Thatcher talked about, the, what we have available to us today, and we didn't used to have that, and so we ought to use the technology that we have. And I was one of those, from a legislator standpoint, that depended on someone else to make sure that I was, that my campaign was doing the right things. I never tried to do anything on myself because I just didn't trust myself in doing that, meeting all the guidelines that you're talking about and the due dates and so forth. But when you stop and think about it, the idea that you have this constant reporting, that's exactly what you want. This is should be a huge help to the campaigns because it gives certainty. You don't have to think about, well, no, did I meet that deadline? I mean, it's automatic. And there'll be others to follow who can tell you more of the details because I'm not a technical person that can answer that. But it had a great deal of appeal to me in that regard. I'd just like to finish up by perhaps answering Representative Hunt's question in regard to, are there other things that would have done? I'm not saying we would have done, but one of the things that has occurred to me and other people on the panel as well, and when we testified in front of the Senate committee on this, and they seemed very receptive to that, and it simply gets back to sort of a common sense approach that there needs to be some oversight that everyone accepts is a very real oversight, and that will tend to keep us to only making honest mistakes.
Right.
And that, in my opinion, is simply that there needs to be an auditing program of some sort. I was in a business position when we dealt with a lot of customers, and I can remember we had an account for bad debts, but when someone came in and decided they were going to take you as a business person, they usually got the job done because that's their motive. Now, the same thing can be, I think, thought of us as taxpayers. If we didn't have an auditing system, I happen to believe that as bad as we don't like the IRS writing us a note, you have been one of the chosen few. Nevertheless, it serves a purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think we can keep the cost under control. It's the idea that if you have the system set up, the agency that we're doing this random audit, and I think there's no problem in making sure that it's random and it's not political and all those kind of things, that would serve a real purpose. And so I just throw that out personally, not from the committee. The committee has not come forth, and I want to make sure that you understand that. But I think it plays into what you spoke of, Mr. Chairman, when the Speaker and Minority Leader Merkley came up with this idea of allowing the public to have the greatest confidence possible in the system. And I think this would play into that arena.
Terrific. Thank you for this comment.
Any questions? I'm not an authority on this.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lynn, when you speak about needing audits, you know, the whole aspect of audits can, I suppose, be overwhelming for some. And you were talking about the need for random audits. Do you think just independent spot checks of particular transactions would accomplish the same thing, or are you speaking of an entire audit of a particular PAC, all the way through from start to finish.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holvey, my intent or my thought would be that you do a complete audit of a particular PAC. Because I think that's the only way, that's my personal opinion. Now, that may not be right, but that's my thought of it, so that it's not just some transactions that you might look at. I'm thinking of going into a PAC and reading this, and as a candidate, as a potential candidate, that I would know that could happen.
Thank you.
To me, it seems like that would be a blessing or a curse. If you're doing a very good job with your contribution and expenditures, and you knew that you were going to have a full audit, and you came out of that very, very well, that's something to hold up, that I've been reviewed. Here's my clean bill of health. And so that's interesting. Representative Thatcher.
While Mr. Lindback was speaking, I was thinking of our little accounting program that we have. It has an audit trail in it. It's a little bit different track than what you're talking about, but it actually shows every transaction, whether it's voided transaction, changed, or whatever. Everything is in there. And I wondered if something like that could be incorporated into the software so that people making an honest mistake, yes, okay, we entered $1,500, but we meant $15, sure. You know, for instance. See the change there. I know you can't answer that, but I'm just
that's right.
Maybe it's more of a comment to Mr. Lindback, and I think the audit, the random audit, is a very good idea.
Was there any discussion in the group about limiting this to just statewide elected officials, or did the conversation get down into the local government arena during your time on the work group?
Mr. Chairman, I think that you could have Mr. John back up for that kind of a comment. I think he has a better handle on all of that framework because there were obviously different discussions about those kind of things, but that's probably the appropriate person to ask that question.
Well, I appreciate the guidance you provided us on making sure that we think one or two steps ahead as we pursue this, because you're right, this is definitely a very complex issue. That as we move forward, we want to make sure that we do this in the best way we can. So thank you very much for your time. Let's see here. Andy Miller from Common Cause, Oregon. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for inviting me here tonight, members of the committee. Today, it's almost the night. I'm going to wait till you have your hand out to explain what is in there.
Thank you.
I'm not going to go through the same details that John did. I do want to make a few comments about how the group worked.
Really, really quick, can you introduce yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. Andy Miller, Common Cause, Oregon, Executive Director.
Thank you.
First of all, I had to take CNE training, and that was very painful. And Fred doesn't like me, Mr. Neal doesn't like me to say this, but I found it very complicated and nonsensical, and I came into this process trying to make it easier for the candidate to do the right thing. I had the pleasure of serving on the Petty Cash subcommittee work group with Darlene Butler, and that was very helpful because she had a very good perspective being from Eastern Oregon. I am the grandmother, mother of the famous Petty Cash provision, which is driving everyone crazy now, so I'll have to confess to that, because I felt that Darlene shouldn't have to say whether they stopped at Burger King or McDonald's, but I lost that battle, I believe. So we look at it from to be a user-friendly system from both ends. In terms of my needs for a system, or my organizational needs for a system, the interactive piece is very important, the searchable database. We do a lot of decision-making based on what money came from whom and went where, and how that groups with other groups of money. And that's important knowledge for people to have, not because we're looking for corruption, because we're looking for patterns in how people make decisions and patterns in how people vote. So I think when we were in the Senate testifying that we were a little bit aggressive And I think we offended Senator Brown by using the word corruption. I personally didn't use it, but some people testifying did. And so I think you ought to know there's more to campaign finance reform than looking for corruption. It is, again, looking for patterns and voting patterns and trends and for all sorts of groups for all sorts of reasons. Attached to your to my testimony, which Ellen Lowe tends to call my church lady talk, which is a little bit of philosophy about democracy, there's a state grading disclosure piece that Mr. Lindbeck made reference to. And on the back of that at the top, you'll see the link to that website, campaigndisclosure.org. I would strongly recommend that you go in there. I would have provided that report to you, but it's a huge PDF, and it'd be much easier for you to go in and look at it on your computers. It's very helpful. We used that model law in a lot of our discussions. We had the person that was in charge of that model law, a man named Bob Stern from I can't think of his group right now, at UCLA subgroup. Very good, and Secretary of State's office brought him up, and he was very helpful. Our statute does not look like the model statute exactly because every state is different, but I think ours has the potential to be one of the best in the nation, which if you like report cards and you are ever a competitive student, you can understand I want us to get an A. I think our searchable database can really help us get there. Some of the provisions, the random audits, I'm so glad that Mr. Lindquist said that. That is crucial. And it only takes one. So I don't think the fiscal will be very large because you, just the idea that you might be the one, you don't have to do 600 audits. You do want, you say that we're going to do an audit. The number's going to be picked randomly by the computer or by a grade school student or whatever, however you decide to do that. So it's random.
Are you envisioning, like, outside on the steps of the Capitol?
Right, you know, like the thing on television with all the balls going around. That would be a good idea. I also brought up with me the press release that came from the speaker and from Representative Merkley, and looking at the six items that they wanted to address. I don't find any of these to be a serious obstacle in the legislation in the individual pieces. The omnibus legislation always drives me nuts. So I looked at it in the individual pieces. It came out both ways. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of things that are just make good sense. And then they put number six, timely disclosure, and establish a web-based reporting system. And as you know, that's the bottom line. That's the huge piece. So I don't see any of the recommendations in this Merkley-Minnis report that would cause any difficulty at all. In terms of further campaign finance reform, disclosure is just the floor. It's not the ceiling. It's a very good start. I think one of the things we need to work out together is what this committee really intends to do. Because if you want to go into campaign finance reform, there's all sorts of different levels of that, too. And there's bills out there and initiatives, and we can really talk to you about that. But if we want to stick with the business at hand, my top priority, my organization's top priority, is seeing that that system gets in and up and running. Any questions?
It's really good to know. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We're going to move to Norman Terrell with the League of Women Voters of Oregon. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Smith and members of the committee. For the record, I am Norman Terrell, speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. And yes, Mr. Chair, men are invited to become members of the League. I am a League State Board member and a member of the League's Action Committee, where I hold the campaign finance portfolio. The League is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization which encourages informed and active participation of citizens in government. They make me say that. I was also a member of the Secretary of State's public disclosure panel, as you've already discovered. Thank you for this opportunity to discuss campaign finance reform. The League has long supported campaign finance reform for Oregon. Our position on campaign finance states that methods of financing political campaigns should ensure the public's right to know, combat corruption and undue influence, enable candidates to compete more equitably for public office, and to allow maximum citizen participation in the political process. House Speaker Minnis and Minority Leader Merkley in February outlined 6 improvements for campaign finance disclosure in Oregon. In the League's opinions, these are all good ideas, but they do not go far enough towards solving major campaign finance issues for Oregon. We particularly like the third idea about auditing a small number of campaigns. However, the particular method suggested for these audits, that is the filing of bank account statements, needs improvement. Auditing could work together with the sixth idea that proposes online electronic campaign disclosure, as we've been discussing. If this is adopted, then only individual contributions or expenditures would be input online, not the full reports that are now filed by campaigns. We suggest that the Elections Division be required to randomly sample and audit a small number of these individual contributions or expenditures. Of course, additional funding of the Election Division will be needed for this purpose. Even randomly auditing one transaction in 100, or even one in 1,000, would be enough to motivate campaigns to honestly and accurately disclose their finances. The Secretary of State's disclosure panel brought together a wide political range of prominent citizens, as you've been hearing. The panel's proposals for online campaign finance disclosure and other reforms are contained in SB 160 and duplicated in SB 822. House Bill 3300 is similar. The League strongly supports SB 160 because it would vastly improve the public's ability to obtain timely and useful campaign finance information before elections. It would also greatly reduce the time and costs for candidates and political committees to comply with the public disclosure laws. Furthermore, county, city, and other local filing officers would be relieved of most of their responsibility and costs for public disclosure. Relieving counties of these responsibilities also provides the economy of scale that helped justify the statewide, a statewide electronic filing system. Recent allegations by Democrats about Republicans' misuse of campaign contributions and recent Republican allegations about Democrats' misreporting only strengthen the need for realistic campaign finance reform. These allegations have raised doubts in the public's mind about trusting legislators with campaign funds. In fact, the League believes that these allegations demonstrate the need for even stronger measures in the form of campaign contribution limits that would be enabled by HGR 38, SGR 5, SGR 3, or HGR 44. Citizens and legislators alike are poorly served when citizens mistrust their elected officials. In the interest of all of us to restore public trust and improve Oregon's political campaigns. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your attention. And I also would mention that I am a computer analyst and software engineer. If you had some technical questions about the proposed online system, I might be able to answer them for you. So I would entertain questions at this time.
You bet. Representative Buckley.
Well, I hope Mr. Trail doesn't have a conflict of interest and is not applying for a job with the state to put together the system. Norman, I'm wondering if you would mention in the bottom of your letter, your testimony here, you mentioned the House joint resolutions and Senate joint resolutions. Would you briefly describe what those joint resolutions would do and offer any comments you might have on the worthiness of those proposals for this committee to hear?
Each of these are very simple. They're one sentence long. There are variations on a theme, But effectively, they're correcting the law and our state constitution for an interpretation by the Oregon Supreme Court that ruled that campaign contribution limits were illegal in Oregon. And so in order to have contribution limits in the state, we need to overrule the Supreme Court. And what's ironic about this is that Oregon actually did have contribution limits for decades, starting in the early 1900s, and they were replaced in 1970s by a law that provided spending limits for candidates as part of the early Watergate reforms. And Oregon, unfortunately, was on the bleeding edge of the reforms at that time. And later, the United States Supreme Court ruled spending limits to be unconstitutional and so wiped out Oregon's spending limits as well. And then we were left with nothing but public disclosure laws. So the effect of those four possible variations are to enable contribution limits again for Oregon.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In your next to the last paragraph, I'm not tracking with how county, city, and other local filing officers would save the time, responsibility, and money from this public disclosure change. Help me understand how that would save them time and money.
Chair Smith and Representative Hunt, the intention, I believe, is to have all candidates in the state be using the same online system and tracking those things through the state database at the same time. And thus, you don't have to file the paper reports with your local officials, and they don't have to review them either. Or do anything else with them, unless there's a complaint that's filed, and that's a whole different matter.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. It's pretty nice that you've done a thorough job here. I have one question. In a previous testimony from Lynn Lundquist, I asked about the difference between, you know, having a complete audit of a PAC or just a spot checks of individual contributions, which in your testimony you seem to be supporting just the individual spot checks of specific contributions and expenditures. Can you tell me why you think that's going to be more effective than doing a random complete audit of a PAC?
Representative Holby, or Chair Smith and Representative Holby, it's my opinion anyway that the purpose of these audits is to ensure that the candidates are motivated to comply with the law. And if you do a concentrated audit on one campaign, the whole burden of that audit is then put on that one campaign, and you might spend days or even weeks responding to an audit. But if the auditing is spread over all the candidates so that, and is targeted to individual contributions or expenditures, then I think that the motivation would be there for everybody, but not the burden would be spread over everybody as well. You follow me? It's my intention that the candidates would, you know, see this as an easy thing to do. It would spend, you know, just a few minutes providing some background documentation for individual contributions or expenditures, and that would be the end of it for them. And if you did a concentrated audit on individual campaign, it would be much longer process. I can imagine auditing like a governor's campaign, you would spend maybe weeks or months at it looking at all the documentation.
Share with me really quick what you envision for online reporting versus what we currently have for online reporting, the difference.
Well, I'd always envisioned this 7-day online system as a web-based system, that you wouldn't need any special software on your computer, but you would just use the web browser, similar to, you know, going to your bank account now. That's done in a secure manner with encryption technology. And the same sort of thing would be used for the Secretary of State's system. You'd log in using your campaign's login username and password, enter in individual contributions or perhaps batch them into the system. And those would be held in a space that was yours for a while, your workspace. And then you could, say, generate a report of the information that you had entered in that session and be allowed to compare it with the records that you have, say that the totals add up to what you think they should be, and at some point you decide that it's okay, that everything's been accurately entered, and then you can go ahead and commit those to the Secretary of State's database, and then that would trigger putting them online for public viewing.
One thing I'd point out to the committee that was an eye-opener for me is that all of our finance reports right now are online. And the citizens of Oregon are able to go to the Secretary of State's webpage and work through it. One area of concern I had is I think we need to remove a little bit of the sophistication, if you will, in what it takes to get to the CNEs, and I think that's an area as a committee we need to work through, no matter what system we go with, is making sure that Oregonians fully know how to go from link to link to link to get into the CNE reports. But again, that's separate from the timely and online, but I think it's important just for the record to let Oregonians know that they currently can go online to look at contribution and expenditure reports.
Yes, Chair Smith, that's the reporting side. I was describing the input side. On the reporting side, the current system is essentially presenting you with whole reports
right.
in a document-based system that you have to do the searching through all the different reports in order to find particular kinds of information. The database that we're suggesting would be searchable on a individual transaction basis so that you could follow through, say, a particular contributor and where that contributor contributed throughout the whole system.
I see.
Whereas right now you'd have to dig through, maybe hundreds of reports to find out that kind of information.
Got it. Thank you. That's very clarifying for me. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would open the dais up to any other members in the audience who would like to come forward and to share their thoughts with the committee. Come on up. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Hello. My name is David Buchanan. I'm the state chairman of Oregon Common Cause. One of the earlier questions was how did the situation get to be in such a hodgepodge? And basically there are two factors that led to that. One was vote by mail, and the other was computer technology. The vote by mail happened because our transition to vote by mail was gradual over 20 years. And in fact, it hasn't actually been completed. This session, there's a bill to put in statutes the vote by mail provisions and delete the polling place election provisions, so we're still at the point now of codifying all of the transitional information that happened in our 20-year conversion to vote by mail. The CNE reporting calendar was based on polling place elections, which occur at a slightly different time and framework than the polling place elections. So one of the reasons for the discontinuity is that CNEs are still based on the calendar, the old calendar. So that's one of the reasons why this has happened. And the other really important aspect of this was the information. Getting the information out was the crucial factor. Most people, most members of the public, don't go to the Secretary of State's office and consult the documents and get their information. Most people read it in the newspaper. And in the old days, on the CNE deadline day at 5 o'clock, the Secretary of State would close and lock the door, and that was the deadline for getting the CNEs in. Then, usually a side door would be unlocked, and the press would be let in after 5, and usually from 5 to 6 or 7 or 8 at night, the press was in there going through all the reports. And there were usually a half dozen or 10 of them in there, and they'd, okay, I've got this batch, you go through that batch, I'll check this batch, we'll go through that batch, and then they'd swap and go through and they'd do their reports. And one year, actually, I should find out what year this was, but one year the whole system changed. Brent Walt, who was then working for the Register Guard, came in with a laptop computer. And this was a new item, and this was really something. Well, the next election, everybody had their own laptop computer, and they were all creating their own databases. So that the press, by using the technology of database building on their own, was able to transmit most of the information to the public through their news reports. So that relieved a whole lot of the pressure, because people were getting a lot of the information, most of the information. Some people thought too much information, some people thought not enough. But the great pressure to get that information out was being accomplished by the newspapers by doing their database creation themselves. And even during that time, there were some efforts from the Secretary of State's office to try and move to a kind of a computerized system. But as computers evolve, the earlier ones had some shortcomings that made early attempts to try and do that less than useful. And there were even a law was passed that kind of mandated electronic reporting, but then there were more exceptions than uses of that. So generally, it was the computer revolution it was a leading edge, and our government keeping up with it was the trailing edge of that factor. So that's kind of why the situation is the way it is today, because the pressure to get the information out mostly was being accommodated, and then the other aspect, the calendar change from polling place to vote by mail elections. That was the main issue that I wanted to bring to you. I hate to admit it, but since I've been working on election laws for so many years now, I remember those days. So I'm not even sure. I think some of the Secretary of State people are still there from that era, but not a lot. Anyway, that was the kind of the history that I think helps to fill in some of the blanks and why the situation is the way it is today. If you have any other questions, I'd be happy to give them a stab.
Any questions for David? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Maybe just more of a comment. So you are open to the idea of simplifying and making these deadlines more sane.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Okay. Absolutely. I mean, I've been a treasurer for CNEs and had to fill them out, and it's not fun and it's not easy. And actually, I got fined once for reporting too much information. You know, it's not a perfect system.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. For those folks who may be listening in on this hearing, about 6 weeks, 8 weeks ago, the House leadership, both House Speaker Karen Minnis and House Democratic Leader Jeff Merkley, announced a bipartisan committee to help ensure the accuracy and transparency of campaign finance reporting. And in a joint press release, they drafted a bill that included six items, and those included increasing fines for converting campaign funds to personal use, ending of commingling of funds, establishing a public review and audit reconciliation process, banning candidate self-compensation, banning double dipping, and timely disclosure. And that's what we as a committee are going to be charged with, is moving that concept forward. As I understand, the rules or election and rules committee has made a motion to send a bill down to us, and then in addition, I understand that there's individual bills, not an omnibus bill, and we're going to be looking at those in the coming days. What I would hope to do is have Cletus work with us in trying to put together our next step. And we'll make sure that we get notice out to the public on how we plan to move forward in the very, very near future, because I think each and every one of us on this committee are very serious about having an open, transparent, accurate and timely process. And I would turn to Representative Hunt if he had anything he wanted to add to this.
No, I think, as I think we've all said, we've got an opportunity to do some good work that will reflect hopefully well not only on ourselves, but also on the representative government in Oregon. In the future, I very much appreciate the comments folks have raised, opening our eyes to looking at, for instance, the whole concept of application of this to local officials is something that's not even been on my radar screen, but is very helpful to opening my own eyes personally. I just wonder, Mr. Chair, if while we're all here, it might be worth looking at our calendars even and trying to arrive at a date in each of our crazy schedules, and we might at least schedule the next meeting.
What's the committee think?
I think we don't have to contact our assistants.
Yes,
one of the things that Annetta, committee assistant, and I will do and do for the committee is actually work with your staff to check with all of your schedules to try to come at a time that will fit with all of your schedules. And we've also been blocking some days out in the future, and those days don't mean we're necessarily going to meet on those days, but that looks like a possible day, so we'll try to give you a heads up on those times to block, and then if it frees up, we'll let you know as soon as we know to let it free up. So the first step is to give you some dates and times to block, so we'll know whether to work on that, and then we'll work from there.
I might suggest to the committee that we would want to invite several of the folks over from the Senate and get their take on the legislation they're advancing forward, so that way the left hand knows what the right hand is doing and vice versa. And so perhaps for a future meeting, that's an item we could have on the agenda. So, and then I do understand we're going to have some additional comment back from the Secretary of State's office on perhaps some more historical perspective on how we came to have the system we currently have, along with the dates. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wanting to follow along the topic I've been kind of interested in is, you know, the audit versus spot check, and I was hoping the Secretary of State's office might be able to provide us, you know, some information as far as they know about the time and cost involved in doing a full-blown audit as opposed to doing spot checks of individual contributions or expenditures. So I can find that information valuable.
Let me ask really quick. John, would that be something you could come back and work with us on? Okay. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, maybe as a possible,
yeah, John, could you come on back up here really quick? You're kind of a key player in this.
I wonder, Mr. Chair, as a possible corollary to that, not only the additional burden and cost it may be, but some places that some of these recommendations may actually save some resources. Mm-hmm. That'd be really helpful to flag those for us. I mean, especially looking at online reporting, a lot of the stupid mistakes that are on my CNEs, I think an online reporting system will resolve most of those because it won't let me hit send until I fill in the zip code or fill in the specific code for that expenditure. So I would think there would be some potential savings there, and I think that would be helpful for us to evaluate both of those.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, John Lindback from the Secretary of State's office. That's exactly how we're thinking of it as well. We want to build into the system features that will help you avoid mistakes. No submitting a donation without that contributor information that's required, including occupation or whatever it ends up being, so that it's very similar to, I don't know how many of you ever used TurboTax or MacinTax or whatever, but the first time I used it, I got this incredible rush at how great it was and how much easier it made it for me to do my taxes. And I want you all to have that same reaction. The first time you use the system, I want you to all go. I mean, our goal is for you all to go, man, why did we wait so long to do this? Then we'll know we've succeeded. In answer to your question, about local candidates. The committee did recommend that the system be cover all local candidates as well. Number one, it's a system that would be easy for them to use, and frankly, very valuable to small campaigns who don't have the money to go out and hire these sophisticated companies to help them. Plus, what we found, to be real frank here, is that there is a varying degree in quality in which those reports on the local level are reviewed by their local filing officers, be they counties or cities. It's just one more thing on the long list of duties for those filing officers, and some do it well and some don't do it so well, and we could sort of build a sort of higher degree of quality into those reviews of that information if it's all done in one place. Plus, all of that information then is made more accessible to the public as well.
John, I think you can tell from this committee we're actually pretty serious about trying to move forward on some type of of system. Would it be possible between now and the next time we ask you to come communicate with us to have you go talk with Senator Johnson, who is chair of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government?
Yes.
And perhaps flag for her that this committee is working on this issue, and just to give her at least a heads up in terms of the budgetary issue that might be coming before her.
Okay.
So.
Great.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if it's appropriate to bring it up right now. We've talked about the cost savings of the individual reports and all that, but how about the system itself? How much would it be? And if you had a pile of money right now to implement it, how long would it take to get up and running?
Both very good questions. Our estimate on it is about $1.5 million. And the reason for that is that within the Elections Division, we have a program called the Elections Business System that wraps in C&E, our candidate filing, our initiative and referendum features. The various aspects of our office all use this system. We need to redo that whole system. And so part of the money is involved with fixing the features that serve all of those functions, not just C&E. And then part of the money would be developing that website and building that into the election business system for a total of about $1.5 million. We believe that the functions that serve all parts of the system could be paid for with Help America Vote Act federal funding. The remaining approximately $700,000 would need to be paid for with general fund. The Help America Vote Act applies to federal elections, and of course our federal candidates file their C&Es with the Federal Elections Commission, not with us, and so we couldn't use HAVA funds to pay for just the C&E portion of the project. But it's about $1.5 million.
Well, I was going to suggest that you could use fines and violation money, but it sounds like we'll be reducing those with the system.
Well, hopefully.
So.
Keep them tiny.
Representative Thatcher.
I still didn't hear a timeline.
I'm sorry.
If you
yes.
had the money today, how long would it take?
Well, we believe that we could have it in place for the next election cycle after the 2006 election. So our goal would be to have it in place by January 1, 2007. The timing of it, of course, is important. We can't sort of implement it in the middle of an election cycle once you've already started down that road. So.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other comments by the committee?
Just thank you for allowing me to speak up.
Well, we hope you'll come back for meeting number two when we're ready to go there. With that said, I guess we will close the
adjourn.
We're going to adjourn.